Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
Hey folks, welcome into the show. This is Beyond the Blockchain. I'm your host, Scott Tindall, here with you live as we are every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Thanks for joining us here on 106.5 FM Talk. If you want to text in some questions, you can always text them in at 251-343-0106. And, you know, we'll be glad to get to them when we can. Tonight's going to be a lot of fun. We've got Mike Horton, the CEO of GeoNet, joining us on the show. GeoNet is this really cool project. You know, we talk a lot on the show about projects that have real-life application to what we're doing. And this is one of those that fits inside this window of what we're now calling TIPIN, which is Token Incentivized Physical Infrastructure Networks. We'll start using that word more as we go. But it's something that I think you're going to be really interested in learning about. It's about weather data and space data and things that can, you know, just really be instrumental in creating the world of the future. And that's what we talk about here. Remember, we talk about Web 3. Web 1 being when we could just consume things on the internet. We would read it and we would learn. Web 2 was where we could actually respond back. And we had conversations going forward. And Web 3 is this new idea that not only can we be involved in the conversation, but we can start to own part of our data as well. So that is coming up here after the first break. As always, we jump into the headlines to start the show. And still in the headlines is, I think, the biggest headline that everyone's still talking about is FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried and his idiocy. And he continues to go down this road of idiocy and continues to make all of us think that we're the silly ones and he's the smart one. Let me jump into this article from CoinDesk today. And it says, former FTX CEO Sam Bankman-Fried, I didn't knowingly commingle funds. Well, that's hard to not knowingly do, right? And to say that he didn't knowingly commingle funds when he was shipping billions of dollars from Alameda Research into FTX and then billions of dollars of his depositors, his customers' money back into Alameda, he either is disassociated from reality or thinks that the rest of us are simpletons and we'll just listen to whatever he has to say. So we're going to get through some of this kind of rough news because I think it's important that you know what's going on. Then we'll get back into the people that are actually building things that are productive and positive for Web3 and blockchain. So the article goes on to say, the collapse of Sam Bankman-Fried's FTX empire left customers with missing funds and unresolved questions. But Bankman-Fried's highly anticipated interview with the New York Times didn't answer any of those questions, nor did it deliver the mea culpa many have hoped for from the 30-year-old former crypto billionaire. Can we just stop calling him that and just call him from the fraudulent person who stole billions of dollars? This whole whitewashing of his activity is starting to become absurd. So Bankman-Fried clings to the narrative that FTX's collapse has resulted from an untimely market crash. And he maintained that he had not knowingly committed any crimes. And as he joined the conversation virtually from his multi-million dollar residence in the Bahamas against the advice of his lawyers. So if you want to know about how smart the fellow is, he continues to give interviews against the advice of his attorneys. I didn't ever try to commit fraud, Bankman-Fried said, which sounds a lot like what my 12, 9, and 6-year-old daughters say when they've done something wrong. I didn't try to do that. Of course, nobody's believing any of this at the moment. But the point you need to know is once we get past all this FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried drama, garbage, we're going to get back to the people that are building things, that are doing blockchain Web3, right? Cryptocurrency happens to be part of how we incentivize the building of these networks, but it's entirely different from kind of this DeFi garbage that FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried have been pumping for a little while. And it's, you know, it's really discouraging because it's going to turn a lot of people off from the industry, and it's going to really put a stain on the industry for quite a while. But that's why on this show, we don't talk about token price. We only talk about the people who are building new things. And that's what we're going to do when we come back from the break. We're going to talk to Mike from GeoNet, and we're going to talk about building new things and GeoNet and how this is going to help build Web3 and change the world when we come back with Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Beyond the Blockchain here on FM Talk 106.5. And as promised, we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about positive things and people who are doing amazing, fun things here inside of Web3 and blockchain. And as a part of that, cryptocurrency. So today we're going to talk to Mike from GeoNet. Mike, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Scott. Nice to be here.
Hey, we're excited to have you. I know you just jumped off a flight, and we're thankful that you made it work to catch us here live, because I know live radio is not always the easiest thing for folks to get a part of.
Looking forward to it.
So, Mike, look, I'm going to let you kind of drive this conversation, and I'll steer us along the way, but why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of GeoNet, where it came from, and kind of what the vision is here of the company?
Great. Sounds good. So first, I'd give a quick introduction to myself, because it kind of leads into the GeoNet project. So I've been working in the field of GPS navigation now for 20-plus years. I started a company after I graduated from UC Berkeley called Crossbow Technology, which was a pioneer in the use of low-cost accelerometers and gyroscopes, these things that are now on your phone, and the development of those, and then using those for navigation. And that brought me into the field of GPS plus IMU navigation for drones and aircraft and land vehicles. And what I realized is one of the major problems is the GPS isn't all that reliable, and it's not all that accurate. And there's been a need to improve the accuracy and the reliability of GPS for a long time. And one of the main techniques to do that is to put in fixed base stations that can compensate for the largest error sources that are in GPS and help mitigate what's called space weather. And so that's the genesis, or the idea of it, is to use blockchain to incentivize people to put up these reference stations, which we can talk a bit about, you know, how they work and why it works. But by putting in a base station in an area, you improve the accuracy of GPS and the reliability of GPS for everyone in the region within about a 20-kilometer range of that station, by passing data from that base station to the mobile device, whether it's a cell phone or a car. You can greatly improve the accuracy, reliability, and you can also detect bad actors, things like spoofing and jamming and so forth. So it's a very powerful technique, but you got to have these base stations deployed everywhere. And to date, that's been a pretty hard problem. The governments have deployed a few. There have been some companies that have attempted to. There have been some recent startups started to deploy stations, but really globally, there's not a dense network of these GNSS reference stations. We also call them space weather stations. And that's really the opportunity that GeoNet's seizing. And the benefit of that will be to improve accuracy and reliability of GPS for users throughout the world. And there are some high-value applications for that that are more traditional, such as construction and agriculture and surveying. And there are some new applications for that, like drones and autonomous cars and small robots and ultimately even your mobile phone. So that's what we're doing with GeoNet.
That's really interesting. So walk me back here through space data and this weather system again. Like, it sounds very futuristic, But what does that mean to our listeners? How do we explain that to them on a, you know, more elementary level?
Well, let's step back and remember how GPS works. So there's a satellite out in deep space, typically in what's called a geostationary orbit, and it sends a signal, and that signal comes to your phone. And if you remember, there's this old formula you learned that, you know, distances equal rate times time. So basically, if you know when the signal is transmitted and you know how fast it's going, and so you know the time difference and you know the speed, you can know the distance. And that distance is then used to calculate your position. You have to obviously have more than one satellite in view. The speed, the rate at which the signal travels, is the speed of light. But it doesn't travel when that signal travels from the satellite to your phone. It goes through our atmosphere, and our atmosphere has layers of the atmosphere called the E layers, which are electrified. They're weak plasmas, and those are the ionosphere and the troposphere. And the signal will experience a variable delay through that layer, which that variable delay means a variable distance, right? If without an external observation, the GPS receiver doesn't know how much delay it experienced in the E layers, in the ionosphere and the troposphere. And those delays are, the variations in those delays are both spatially sensitive, like the delay I'm experiencing is different from the delay 50 kilometers away, and they're time dependent. They're varying second to second. And what's causing the variation in these delays is the sun. The sun's nuclear fire is burning, and it creates a solar wind, and that is hitting the Earth, and it is modulating or changing these delays. And that's the primary source of GPS inaccuracy. And when space weather kicks up and it's actually heading into a 11-year cycle, they call it, where space weather is going to get stronger, it can get bad enough to the point that GPS just doesn't even work. And so when your plane takes off, they actually do calculations and things like this to determine whether GPS will be usable during the flight. So this is the basic principle, and the basic way to compensate for that is to have stations that are fixed in position that we know they're not moving. So that's why when we talk about installing a GeoNet station, it's very important to have a very good solid mount and a very good clear sky view. So there's nothing else affecting the signals from GPS except for the space weather. And then by observing that, we're able to determine the contribution of the ionosphere and troposphere delay to the GPS signal and use that to compensate the rover and keep the rover's position more accurate. And it's dramatic. It's 100x improvement in accuracy. So if you were to take your phone or your car and park it out in a clear sky parking lot and record the position from the GPS and the car navigation system over a period of a couple hours, you'll see it moving around with a standard deviation of about a meter, but peaks of error up to 3-5 meters. So pretty big distances, right? 15 feet. Now, if you take GeoNet corrections and apply that to that same data, that position will be held within 1 centimeter. So it's a dramatic, 100x type of improvement in reliability and in accuracy that you get by compensating for these ionospheric and tropospheric distortions.
That's pretty amazing. You're taking me back to some of my science classes at college and reminding me of words that I've forgotten that I knew. But I understand what you're saying now. And this new level of accuracy can be tremendously important. Talk about how this decentralized model helps you build GeoNet out now in a way that maybe wouldn't have been able to be done before we were able to use, blockchain technology and maybe this tokenized incentive process to build out a network.
Yeah, absolutely. So the problem I just described has been well understood for more than 20 years, and the industry has been hard at work at solving it. And the way the industry has approached solving it is to figure out how to try to solve this problem with the fewest stations possible. And because it's so hard to put in ground infrastructure. And the result of that has been, networks that require very, very good receivers on the rover side. So things like a surveying receiver from somebody like Leica or Trimble might be a $20,000 device because it has a very extra precise, much better than the GPS in your phone so that it can work with corrections that are coming from a long ways away to get this accuracy. So the whole industry has spent a long time trying to figure out, well, how to do it with not so many stations, because putting in stations is difficult and hard. But when you looked at like Helium and the success they had in putting in the LoRa stations, I realized that using blockchain, you could turn the problem on its head and say, look, it's not that hard to get. I mean, for what we're trying to do, our station density is substantially lower than some of the other tip-in type of networks that are being deployed. At one at 20 kilometers type of spacing is a lower density requirement than some of the wireless projects, but still revolutionary from a GPS perspective. So using blockchain, we're able to really turn the problem on its head and say, look, we can put stations everywhere. And that in turn says the requirements on the mobile device, being a mobile phone or your car or a piece of agricultural equipment or a robot or a drone, the requirements on that device go way down. And that device can use a much cheaper receiver and work in a much faster and simpler way than trying to use a network with very sparse density stations. And that's really what blockchain is bringing, is letting us use this technology for mass market devices.
Is it fair to say that if you were trying to build this network out outside of the blockchain, it would be probably cost prohibitive and extremely almost impossible to build, but with this new ability to use tokenized incentives, now it becomes a business model that probably starts to make sense. Is that fair?
Yes, that's a great way to put it, and that as you look towards the developing markets where we have, I think GeoNet has a pretty good, strong focus on both the USA and Europe, but also in developing markets, that's even more true because the density of revenue is lower there, so the cost to and put in infrastructure is more sensitive. But to date, nobody's ever built the type of network that we're talking about doing. I mean, our goal over the next couple of years is to get to 100,000 stations, which I think is definitely a very doable goal, given that Helium has gotten to 900,000 stations. Now we want to do a few things differently to support our user base and our applications than what was done there. But it's doable, and that is going to be absolutely revolutionary to the field of navigation. And to some other fields as well. Navigation is the application that has the most money behind it today because of things like autonomy and self-driving cars, but also because of, you know, classical applications like agriculture and construction, which are and transportation, which are huge parts of our economy, right? So there's a lot of money in those applications, but there are also scientific applications as well as true environmental applications and structural monitoring and even air quality detection can be done through GNSS measurement. So there's a lot of other applications for the data, but we tend to focus from a business side today, we focus on the sort of high accuracy, high integrity positioning because there's a lot of momentum in the market to develop and use these types of high precision positioning services.
So that's really interesting to me because, you know, our listeners are familiar with the Helium Network. We've talked to many other kind of some of these tip-in projects. And so our listeners are starting to understand how this tokenized incentive process can work and why it makes sense. And what you're delivering to us today is a whole new range of possibilities and developments that can take place through positioning of these GeoNet devices. We're going to go to break here in a minute, but when we come back from the break, I'd love to visit with you more about the device, how it works, why it works, and how people can get involved in the network. Is that something that you think we could visit with going forward?
Yeah, you bet. We can dive into that.
So, you know, for our listeners, just to recap, we've started talking about something that we're calling TIPIN now. It's tokenized, incentivized, physical infrastructure networks. And so a lot of people ask, like, when is crypto going to be relevant to me? When is the blockchain relevant to me? And what we want to talk about on this show are the projects that are actually doing that and not so much those that are what you see in the headlines today. But what I think you should know is these projects that we talk about are the future of Web3, and they are the future of the way blockchain can help solve so many of our other problems. And Mike, I'm thankful that you're here with us on the show tonight. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk more about this. We'll talk more about how you can get involved in GeoNet and why it matters. Because at the end of the day, why it matters is what this show is about. So when we come back, we'll talk to Mike more here on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain. I'm your host, Scott Tindall, here with you every Wednesday night, as we are here on 106.5 FM Talk, which we may be, Philip, I don't know for sure, but we've got to be one of a very small handful, if not the only.
The elite.
I don't know about elite, but one of the only live terrestrial shows talking about blockchain technology here in America. A lot of people are abandoning it. And you know what we do? We talk to the builders. We talk to the people that are building the future. And that's what makes me excited. So we got Mike here from GeoNet. Mike, thanks for being a builder, bud.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the encouragement.
Man, it's exciting. We got to learn a little bit about the project earlier on the first part of the show, but come back on this side of the show. Let's talk a little more about the practicality, the use cases, and how this data and information is being used in real life. Do you want to kind of walk us through a little bit about that? And then once we get through that, we'll talk about how some of our listeners or other people can get involved in the project. But to start, like, how is this data being used? What's the best way that we can take this data and use it for real life to help build new things?
Well, I think, you know, the maybe first and simplest application that listeners can understand is when they flip on their phone and they've experienced driving through a city with the car navigation application, and sometimes they're not on the right street, and they're experiencing problems in urban environments or under trees or wherever where the directions just aren't quite right. A lot of that's coming from the fact that the GPS is not lane-level accurate. To be a lane-level accurate measurement, you need to be sub-meter. And, you know, you're typically in a phone, in a car, you may be seeing 3-5 meters of error in the GPS. So our goal is when you flip that phone open, over time, that you'll be able to experience a much higher degree of accuracy from your GPS, and then use it for things that require higher accuracy applications like augmented reality, where you're going to mesh the digital world with the physical world. You need that registration to be really tight, right? You want the thing in the virtual world to be in the right place in the real world, and to do that, you need centimeter precision. So that's a little bit more futuristic use case combined with a very practical use case of driving to, you know, just driving directions. And those are things that are very much real-world applications of the type of data that's collected by the GeoNet network. It goes through some processing and then gets streamed back to the cellular phone as a set of corrections that can assist and augment the GNSS service. Now, there are other applications that are a little bit higher value and more where the technology, this high precision GNSS technology started, such as construction. So when you see people out on the street doing surveying work, they are always using corrections. They are always using RTK technology, because if you survey and you're doing construction, you know, 3 feet to 15 feet is not an acceptable, like, should we put the wall here or over there? I mean, if there's ambiguity on that scale, that's not what construction's about. Construction's about centimeters and millimeters. So they're always using these types of technologies whenever they're doing paving, excavation, surveying points. You'll see these guys out on the road quite often. They have a stick, and at the top of the stick is a GPS receiver. And that GPS receiver is receiving RTK corrections from a network like GeoNet in order to enable that high accuracy work that they do. So those are a couple of examples, also heavily used in agriculture. Farming now is a pretty sophisticated technology business. Almost every tractor around has some kind of steering assistance system to help help the farmer or the farmer's workers drive the tractor accurately. You don't want to be driving over your plants, right? And you don't want to be spraying chemicals where they're not needed. So operations in the field all use this type of high-precision GNSS because meter-level accuracy, again, in the farming, I mean, which row you're on, it's a much smaller distance. It's a much tighter accuracy than the meter-level accuracy from GPS by itself.
I think that's a great point, and that makes a lot of sense to me. So when I'm driving down the interstate now and I see someone surveying, where are they getting their data and what level of accuracy are they measuring things with?
Well, so the terminology that we talk about a lot is a base and a rover, and that terminology comes from the way this historically this problem has been solved. And historically, the problem has been solved by that surveyor has a companion that's off over a grid point that's been set up by the NGS, like the National Geodetic Survey. If you look on the ground, you'll see these markers. And there's a companion who's got another GPS, and he's put it down on that marker. And he set it there typically a good while before they go out on the survey job to let it survey in and get its grid well aligned to that survey point. And then they manually dial that coordinate in, and then the guy with the rover is actually connected to the base by a radio link, by an old-style, kind of like a Helium LoRa a radio, but typically a 433 megahertz or 900 megahertz long-range radio. So they've built a two-node network, right? But this is very inconvenient. I mean, you're not going to set up stations for cars. You're not going to set up stations for cell phones. And it actually adds a lot of time and work for the surveyor's job. So nobody really likes the system of setting up a base station and a rover. So the idea of a network solution, which is a relatively new idea, is to put a terrestrial network in so that you don't have to set up that base station when you want to go out and do surveying. You can just dial into the network and get the corrections live. Flip on your survey stick and go. That's what GeoNet does. And GeoNet's doing it at an unprecedented density and scale with its goals of using decentralized technology to build out a much, much denser station. And that means faster, more accuracy for everyone who's using GPS in the vicinity of that station.
I can't imagine anybody is upset with faster or more accurate information. That doesn't seem to be the type of thing that people would
and
be.
And more trustworthy. And so more trustworthy, yeah. We haven't touched on yet is the real threats to the GPS infrastructure from jamming and spoofing. And this can cause significant financial losses as well as actually be used as a real weapon. So the GPS system is a one-way transmission from that satellite to your receiver, and it's an open protocol. It's published. You can go on the U.S. Air Force website and download the ICD, the specification of what these signals are. And so as a result, because it's unencrypted and a one-way signal from the satellite to the receiver, it's very easy to jam and spoof. And this is becoming an increasingly serious problem. And the benefit of a dense terrestrial network like GeoNet is it can detect that jamming and spoofing and warn users. And in certain cases where they're basically people are playing with the ephemeris may even in the future be able to help, correct the spoofing and inform the mobile GPS of the correct signals and allow it to still operate even though somebody's actively trying to move you around. And if you don't believe me on how easy this is to do, you can go on YouTube and you can search up GPS spoofing. You can find videos and tutorials with devices you can buy off Amazon and do a little bit of downloading of some software, and you can go spoof it yourself. Now, that's highly illegal. Be advised, your listeners should be advised, doing such a thing is highly illegal, but there are spoofing is not hard, and jamming is even easier. There are $10 jammers you can buy that will just simply block out the GPS signal. So these very real threats to our location infrastructure are another aspect of what GeoNet can help solve.
I mean, it's very concerning to me that you can spend $10 and block or spend a little bit of time and spoof some of this geospatial technology. So GeoNet solving that problem does seem like a almost seems like a national security issue that needs to be resolved.
It's a big national security issue, Scott. And the only reason you don't hear more about it is because the government doesn't want you to know just how easy it is and what a serious threat it is. And it's a threat, obviously, to drivers and to truckers and to people who are dependent on GPS for mobility and aircraft and drones. But it's also a threat to data centers and to cellular infrastructure because, our network relies on GPS for timing so that basically the precision source of time that everything uses to synchronize together and work is time. And that also can be easily impacted by GPS spoofing. And if you do a little digging and a little Google searching and look at the Homeland Security website, you'll see all kinds of information about it. But it's not something you hear about every day. Partly because I don't think there's a lot of incentive and public safety to sort of let people know just how easy this stuff is to do and how dangerous it is.
Well, that certainly seems like something we should be paying more attention to as we move forward. And it's nice to know that GeoNet can hopefully possibly provide some bit of, backup to that type of infrastructure.
Detection and warning capability, GeoNet will provide an unprecedented capability for detecting where interference, spoofing, and jamming is occurring and isolating that and knowing where those sources are coming from. In terms of mitigating it, there's a bit more work involved and engineering involved in that. And obviously, this is something that we think we can monetize as well. This is a data stream. It's not our first data product. Our first data product is really about high accuracy GPS, and that we're well on our way towards bringing revenue into the project. Data revenue, not revenue by selling miners, revenue from actually people using GeoNet for the high precision service, but it's certainly on our radar to look at these applications in public safety. Jamming and spoofing detection as well.
That sounds great. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, let's finish more of this conversation about this and how people can get involved with GeoNet.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Scott Tindall, here on Beyond the Blockchain. We're talking to Mike Horton from GeoNet. We're talking a lot about geospatial technology. We're talking about things that are pretty heady. But we're also talking about national security issues, and we're talking about agriculture and construction and things that are really impactful on your everyday lives. But what I want to do for this last segment is talk about how maybe you can get involved. And this is a what we call TIPIN, Token Incentivized Physical Infrastructure Network, and why that matters to you. So, Mike, welcome back to the show. We appreciate you being here tonight. Can you talk a little bit about maybe how our listeners can become a part of the GeoNet infrastructure and why that matters?
Yes, you bet. So the easiest way to get involved in the GeoNet project, if you own a property or have access to a property where you can put a station with a clear view of the sky, you can start to mine the sky. And that's really kind of the GeoNet tagline is to mine the sky, because literally that station is the way it is earning tokens is by observing these satellite signals 24/7, 365, and uploading a stream of data from those observations to the internet. To set up a station really just requires that you have good stable internet and a good clear sky view where you can mount the antenna. Unlike a DY project, these antennas don't transmit anything. They are receive only. And as such, they're installable just about anywhere in the world legally. So there's really very few places that there's any sort of regulatory concern about installing a GPS receiver, which is effectively what the base station or space weather station is. But you do need a place that has a good clear sky view. You don't want trees overhanging. You don't want a bigger building next door. You can't put it on a balcony. It's really got to be on the roof. to get the observability it needs, and then a good internet connection. The device itself, these stations will run between 1 and 2 watts, and they're uploading roughly 3 to 6 gigabytes of data per month. So it doesn't put a huge load on your internet network. It doesn't require much power, but you do need a stable internet connection because the data, you know, as we talked about earlier, space weather data changes second to second. So if your station goes down, then observations in that hex, if you will, are not available, and that's obviously a network fault for that region unless we have an additional station in that hex. So it's important to have good internet and a good clear sky view, but it's easy to set up. It only takes a couple hours, assuming you know how to get up on a ladder and install this antenna, which isn't, again, not very big. It's kind of a white frisbee-sized disc that you mount up on your roof and connect down to the receiver, which connects to the internet.
How about redundancy? Within any given, you know, we mentioned hex, and we've talked about hexes before with some of the other projects, but what do you want your, to use geospatial as the term, what do you want your geospatial distance to look like for these receivers, and what does redundancy need to look like in case someone's receiver does go down?
Yeah, I think the more stations, we're certainly in a phase right now where the network is growing, and we have not implemented any punishment for overcrowding unless the two stations are literally in the same place. And, you know, one thing about our project is we do really are able to very fairly reward the token rewards are very fair, and because we have really good observations as to how good the station installation is and the data quality. So we're not, you know, dependent on something like a proof of coverage, which is a lot harder to calculate than a proof of accuracy and proof of location, which are how our nodes work. So at the moment, you know, there's no, it's early, and it's a great time to get involved in the project because there is no, we're really encouraging to get as many stations as we can up. So as long as it's not literally on top of another station, your station will earn tokens. And right now, stations that are meeting a very high quality level are eligible to receive an NFT for that location. And that NFT will protect that station from future degradation and rewards if there is overcrowding in that hex. So if you get in early and get your station up and the station does well, then you can earn an NFT that will protect you from future degradation and rewards as station density becomes denser. And, you know, we certainly would like to have redundancy, but at some level, too, we can't, as the network grows, if there's 20 stations in one hex, then that's too much redundancy. And so there is going to be splitting of rewards in that hex, except for whoever holds the NFT in that hex.
I think that's a really neat way of doing it, and certainly a new level of innovation. I would guess something you learned from some of the previous projects in the related space. And if somebody wants to create a space weather station, which to me just sounds amazing, like I'm part of a space weather station project, what do they need to do? How do they get involved? Do they go to your website, or what's the best way to get my own space weather station?
Yeah, so the GeoNet project doesn't sell miners, but it is working in the same manner that the Helium project to create a community of companies that make miners. Now, the first company that is selling a miner is hyfix.ai, and you can go to that website. It's hyfix.ai to buy a miner. And in full disclosure, that company is run by myself and one of the other team members in GeoNet. Now, some of the other team members in GeoNet are not at all involved in hyfix, but I decided that in order to ensure that we don't run into supply chain problems and long delays in miners, that given my long history in the navigation field and infrastructure that I have access to actually build the miner at a competitive cost and get it out on time, that I should take a lead and get a company started to build miners. So that's what hyfix does. But we're working with a number of other companies to build miners, and I think by early next year you'll start to see some of those miner designs are progressing well. So I think we will have an ecosystem like the other project, like Helium, that has a couple different places you can buy miners. Maybe not as many, not an excessive number, but at least enough to serve different applications and capabilities. We also have HiFix also has a number of distributors. So if you're not in the U.S., you can get one with quick delivery. But for U.S. Customers who want to set up a station and start mining the sky, the best way to do that is to visit HiFix, HYFIX.AI. And there are also links on the GeoNet project page to both HiFix as well as the various distributors of the miners.
I think that's really important for our listeners. I think a lot of people would be interested in that. So if you're interested in becoming a part of the GeoNet project, you want to go to HiFix.AI. It's HYFIX.AI. And you can mine the sky. Mike, I wish we had another hour to talk through this because this is incredibly fascinating. Unfortunately, this is live radio and we're out of time. But thanks for joining us.
All right.
This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks again, Scott, for having me.
Yeah, man. Let's do it again another time this spring when we got more to talk about.
Sounds good. Have a good night.
Cheers. Likewise. Bye.